gives me great pleasure to introduce our 10-minute speaker for this evening, Eric. Good job. Good job.
Hi, my name's Eric, and I'm an alcoholic. And I guess I'm going to break it into probably three parts, a little bit about my upbringing, who I am, and then I guess what got me here and how it's been ever since I came to AA. And I'm going to end with something on acceptance. That's the goal anyway. So a little about myself. I grew up in the Midwest. I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That's Brewtown, in case you didn't know or forgotten or are coming in from someplace else. So I sometimes look back on it and I think, well, maybe that was an indicator that I would end up in AA, but I'm sure there are plenty of people that didn't become alcoholics that are from Milwaukee. I don't consider myself from there. I consider myself having been born there. So I have three brothers. One of them has passed away. My parents have passed away also. We settled in Minnesota, and so I consider myself a Minnesotan. And I thought I had a very good upbringing. I went straight. It wasn't perfect. There was a lot of drinking. And I could have drunk quite a bit as a kid. I only did it one time. I cracked a beer when I was maybe 10 or 11, and I drank it, and I basically thought, oh, big deal. And then I had the people that would come over to the house. We had one of these houses where the people would come there, not just after bar parties, but as a place to talk about many things, a marketplace of ideas, if you will. And I thought it was interesting. It was great, all the people that would come in. But you could see a number of the people, too. They'd continue to drink, and I just thought they became stupid. So to me, it was very unattractive. I wanted nothing to do with that. And so that was my goal as I went through school. I didn't want to drink, and I never really got involved with that culture, drinking or drugs. I wanted to play sports and remain eligible, etc. But then when I turned 18, I thought, well, you know, now I can do it. It's legal. So let's see what I was missing. So then I started to get into alcohol and mainly marijuana and things like that. And I went at that heavy duty, and frankly, it derailed my college career at that point. And I was just kind of drifting about, and by the age of about 25, I decided the same thing. It's like, you know, that wasn't you in the beginning of your life, so I'm going to turn it off again. And I did, basically. I just said, that's enough. I don't want to do it. So I quit drinking and quit doing, you know, whatever drugs I did at that point. And I actually took a job as a bartender. So I don't know if that was a smart idea, but that's what I did. But I didn't drink when I was a bartender. So I did that for about 3 years and had the opportunity, thanks to my great aunt, to go back to school, completed my education, became a teacher, mostly as a substitute, but also some full-time teaching as well. So I'm about 30 years old at this point, and I'm still not drinking. I'm the person that doesn't want to drink. When I was working as a bartender, people would buy me a drink, and it's like, you know, you'd step in the kitty or whatever. It wouldn't be something that I would drink, and I could have been drunk all the time. It was not attractive to me. So I get started in education, and in the year 2000, my mom passes away, and something I had always wanted to do, I was the homeboy forever, I really was. I stayed at home. My other brothers moved away, but I stayed in Minnesota. But I'd always thought, boy, it'd be kind of fun to go overseas at some point. And when my mom passed away, it was really kind of the point. I was, at this point, probably about 40 years old, so I went overseas. I went to Finland, and I taught over there for a year. And it was a great experience. Again, I was the eternal homeboy, homebody, and there I was in a foreign country. And it was, in many ways, the greatest teaching experience I had, in many ways, but not in every way. And I took over for a lady who was from Northern Ireland, and she said she drank wine. And I can remember running into a Filipino lady, and she said, I didn't drink until I came to Finland. And so actually, that's kind of what I think. I thought long and hard. I've been in the program just a little over a year, and I think that's kind of what rekindled the thing, maybe going back to my 20s. So I started to drink, and when I would drink, I would get pretty drunk over there, not on a daily basis, but I found a drinking buddy eventually. So that kind of rekindled it. I come back to the States, unemployed. It's like, well, I better find a job. So then I moved to Arizona. And I at that point, I continued to drink, probably to excess at some points. And I got connected with my girlfriend who lived in Santa Barbara, and then we'd have like Saturday Night Fun Time on the internet. And it was great. Then I lose my job in Arizona. And she says, well, you know, it's time to blanker, get off the pot. So I came off the pot and moved out here to Santa Maria Orchid. So that started my life out here. So, but when we would go wine tasting and doing those things, it was terrific. And she knew how to turn it off. And I would say that I really didn't. And then it became a matter of sneaking alcohol, and not just wine, like having jugs of vodka. And about 2013, 2014, I reached a point where I knew I was going to crash and burn. And in the meantime, I was concealing this to her. She didn't know about it. Not because she's not smart. She's smarter than I was, for sure. But because she had a trusting heart, and that really broke my heart when I gave her the news one day. It's like, I told her, I said, I got a drinking problem. And she was surprised, and I just let it out. And it's like, prove it to me. And I showed her, I had like a big jug of vodka, and it crushed her. But the reason I did that, not because I was such a great guy, it was because I was already suffering those physical signs, and I knew she would probably see me on the floor or something, like in a ball shaking, because that's the point I had reached. So I quit at that point, and we worked together to work through the trust issues, which were of my making. Now I've broken her trust. And so for a number of years, maybe 4 or 5 years, I really didn't drink. And then I got the chance to drink, and she gave me the nod. I'm not blaming it on her. I take responsibility for every drink that I've ever drunk. But once again, it led to that behavior. And then it peaked last summer. And it got so bad, it reached that point again where I'm seeing spiders on the wall and just doing just crazy things. I mean, swimming when I'm just totally drunk and swimming alone, just total risky behaviors. And I'll share one story that is, I think, a little bit funny, but I shake my head at it. I'd gone swimming, and then I started walking away from the pool. I live at a old folks' place, mobile homes. And I noticed I didn't have my swimming trunks on. And sometimes I would do that because just they come off. You know, if you've got the fat guy syndrome like I do, you're always pulling up your trousers, etc. So it's like, where were they? And I was very intoxicated. And usually I just would walk home. It's not far, like a block and a half, but you're within the complex. You're not in the city streets. So then it's like right away I get outside of the complex, not able to figure out where my shorts were. I was totally nude, waist down. So I pulled my shirt over my private parts. Wouldn't you know it, the only time in my life somebody comes up and asks for directions. And so, as best I could, I gave directions and I got home. And what was, it's funny, but it's not good also, because I don't own the place that I live at. And I certainly was risking the possibility of being tossed totally out of the place. It's like, who is this guy? You know, just what's he looking for in this place running around like that? And then like a fool, I went back to the scene of the crime the next day and found my trunks in there. But I mean, but that's the kind of idiotic behavior. But this all culminated in late June of last year. And I just totally crashed, and I was having a mental health crisis. I had so much booze in my system. And a very dear friend of mine, we had long distance phone conversations. I'd passed out on the phone. He lives in Iowa. So he would go like, what happened last night? I didn't know whether to call the paramedics where you live, or, you know, you're laughing at everything. You normally don't do that. But this time I told him myself. I called 911 because I was flipping lights on and off. And I just had a meltdown. I could not get to sleep. I couldn't put myself down. So I knew I was in bad shape. Went to the hospital, and that's when my life started to change. So I reached out to a friend via text message, and she connected me with somebody in the program. He took me to my first meeting, which was the STAG meeting. I met some of you here for the very first time. And I was just in a fog, and I felt guilty. I felt like, you know, I was a complete dumbass, a failure, whatever negative way that you want to describe yourself. But what was encouraging was that nobody that met me treated me that way. And to me, that was the thing that kept me coming back. It really did. Because people reached out to me and they helped me. And it's like, as I like to say, it's like I was the conquering hero. And it changed my life. It really did. So that was June 26th of 2022. So that's my sobriety date. And since then, I have come to meet a number of great people. Well, all of you are great people, but I just don't know you as well. But they got me on the path, my sponsor got me on the path to doing what you have done, what people have done for generations, I guess, in AA. So I feel much better about myself, and more things have been revealed to me, and I love the fellowship that I've encountered in the past year. I'm very pleased also that my spirituality has been lifted greatly. And that's something I think I was truly missing within my life. Maybe that's what it was, a desperate call for spirituality, friendship, which I didn't really have. And it's just amazing. And I actually had a little bit of a health crisis the other day where thankfully it was nothing major. But the beauty of it was that I had people that had reached out to me, and before I didn't have that. And it makes me think of people that really don't have that in their lives. But over the course of a year, I know so many people. It's just astounding. And these are people that I can count on. So that's where I'm at today. That's a little bit about me. So I'd like to end with acceptance, like I said. You got to bring your big book, right? That's what the man says, right? Okay. I chose to focus on acceptance because it is something I have to continually work on. So I'm going to read just a little bit and then share a story about acceptance, because I don't think acceptance has to be something that's so heavy. Oh, I accept that, you know, so-and-so, my relative is suffering from this or that. To me, it can be something of a humorous nature, and I like to share that story. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact in my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at that moment. And the one story I'd like to share, this took place not terribly long ago, and some of you perhaps remember a celebration called May Day. It was an old-fashioned day when I was growing up, but I thought it was how charming. You reach out to your neighbors and you give them like goodies, cookies, whatever else you decide to put in this basket. And if it's a boy-girl thing and you're courting somebody, there's an old term, courting, you'd rap on their door and run, and if they could catch you, they'd get to kiss you, that type of thing. I wasn't going to kiss anybody, but I thought that would be fun. It was a great tradition. Where's it gone? So I thought I'm going to rekindle it. And so I got all these May baskets made up, and I delivered them to people just around where I lived. So it was a lot of fun. I didn't rap on the door, but I just left the baskets. Now, I was expecting people to come to me and go, oh, was that you that did that? Was that you that did that? Nobody. Because that's where my ego jumps in. Because I was making it about me. So nobody said that to me. And in the long run, hey, I had the fun of preparing those and giving them to my neighbors. So I hope they enjoyed them, because that's what I thought it was about, the giving and not having it to be about me and my ego. So that's what it's about, acceptance. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric.